The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We've moved from our studio at the Radisson Blue Hotel in Cardiff back to our home base here at Edstone, the beautiful campus in the Midlands, and we're good to go. Lots to get to on today's program. We're going to, in the second segment, spend just a little bit more time following up on that story from Sarah Carter that I mentioned on yesterday's show. Just about how dishonest the Mueller report is in at least in the section that she brought out, and of course it makes you wonder how many more sections, or paragraphs, or subjects are treated with dishonesty as well. Also on today's program, here in the first segment, we're going to spend a lot of time on President Trump's state dinner last night at Buckingham Palace. What a scene. We'll be getting into some of the clips from the Queen, Queen Elizabeth II, and then also Donald Trump's speech. And I think you'll just be riveted by some of the things that were said. And certainly the display of this special relationship between the United States and Great Britain. Before I get into the news, however, just an update on the Cardiff Pack. Last night we had a total of 35 people. Half of them, 17 I guess, were non-members. So the follow-through percentage was lower than what we got in Glasgow and Belfast. But again, just judging by the time that we spent with the people that were there Sunday afternoon and evening, and then again last night, even though it was a later event, quite a few of them stayed for a long time. We didn't hit the road, I think, until around 10 o'clock, which put us back to Edstone about midnight. But some really good quality. Of course, it'll, I guess, like anything, we'll have to see a few months down the road or maybe even a year or two down the road. But I think all of us agree that there's some really good quality readers, and some came from an hour or 2 hours away as well. So they're not all just right from the Cardiff area or even from Wales, although we did have quite a number of Cardiff residents that were there on both nights and that were very, very grateful for us reaching out to them in their area. The message that I gave, by the way, it focused on action or being a doer of God's word, and I really tried to put it together with the first lecture on some of these end-time prophecies and just encourage them to act before it's too late. I said on a couple of occasions that you don't want to sit and wait and wait and wait until you find out then that it's too late to act. Well, as far as this incredible scene last night at Buckingham Palace, I think I want to just preface it by referring you back to things my father was saying at the end of 2016. This is following the election of Donald Trump, and he referred to a prophecy in Hosea 5 about the people of Ephraim and Manasseh, both of them going the way of Jeroboam. I think it's verse 11 in Hosea 5, where it says, Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walked after the commandment, or as my father has brought out, really that's referring to walking after the commandment of Jeroboam. And my father wrote, this is from November 23rd, 2016, the coworker letter. He says, now that the United Kingdom has decided to break away from Europe, it will be more desperate to trade with the U.S. This will probably result in it following Jeroboam's lead into disaster. Now, just focusing more on the first part of that statement, when you consider the reaction here in Britain to Donald Trump's election, it was overwhelmingly negative. And here's my father saying, right after his election, that the UK is going to be more desperate to trade with the US. Well, now here we are in June of 2019, and look at what's happening. As people are just, now they're desperate to get out of the EU. That's what they voted for. And now there's more and more people in the UK. It's not a majority yet, but there are more people today that are saying, well, you know, maybe we need someone like Donald Trump. Maybe we need someone who will stand up to the EU. Maybe we need someone to just lead us out, to break us free from this union. Listen to what Nigel Farage said last night. I think this was on one of the Fox programs, clip three.
I mean, look, 3 years ago, I was almost the only person in Britain standing up fighting for Donald Trump and saying he was the right person. It was a very lonely place. Incidentally, at the time, Boris was saying things like, I wouldn't even go to New York in case I met Donald Trump. So, OK, times change, things move on. What people have seen in this country are governments that get elected on promises and then break them. And in America, you've got a president who does what he said he was elected to do. The label on the tin is right, and he is earning credibility. His approval rating in Britain is now a third, but it was way less than that 3 years ago. So people are beginning to understand that he is the right guy.
People are beginning to understand that he is the right guy, he said there at the end of that clip. The Washington Examiner, it had a piece the other day saying that it might be that Donald Trump can help the UK out of this this Brexit madness. The article says thoughtful analysts agree that maybe the worst strategic mistake that Theresa May made, from which flowed catastrophe after catastrophe, was to refuse Donald Trump's invitation right after his inauguration to get on with an Anglo-American free trade agreement. You remember that? He's voted in, and then the inauguration, and then President Trump said to Britain, look, just get out of the EU, and let's get on with trade between America and Britain. This article says, though, steered by her officials who, as subsequent events have shown, were already plotting to lock the UK into a permanent customs union with the EU as a means of killing Brexit, timid Theresa May reportedly told Trump that it was too early. So Donald Trump reaches out to help. And then her response, this is going back a little over 2 years ago, her response was to, you know, keep a safe distance from Donald Trump. A lot of people, after all, didn't like him. The article says that was nonsense, of course. After the people's instruction to leave, the EU has nothing to say about when or with whom we strike trade deals, and especially not with our oldest and most important ally and trading partner. As you'll hear from some of the clips we'll play in a moment, they really are emphasizing this strong alliance that goes back for centuries even. The Examiner says surrendering the sequencing of Brexit negotiations to the EU gave Michael Barnier, who could not believe his luck, the upper hand, when in fact, as the world's fifth largest economy, Great Britain holds the most powerful trade, financial services, security, innovation, and geopolitical cards. It should have been Britain in the driver's seat with respect to Brexit negotiations. As it's been, they just gave the upper hand to EU officials. And here it was at a time when President Trump, the President of the United States, was saying, look, get out of the EU and let's get on with free trade between the United States and Britain. It says, this is the conclusion, listen to this, during the state visit, President Trump could perform no greater service as a loyal friend than to offer Great Britain once more the invitation to conclude at once the Anglo-American trade deal that Theresa May declined. It would put a mighty wind in our sails as our new helmsman steers us out of the stale doldrums of May, Theresa May, we would be forever in Trump's debt. Well, he's the president today is meeting with Theresa May, and I'm sure they're going to have a lot of lively discussions. But just go back to what my father said just days after the election of Donald Trump. And he based it on that prophecy in Hosea 5, saying that the UK was going to end up more desperate as it worked to break free from Europe. And that it would probably result in a stronger trade relationship, a stronger relationship, in fact, between the United States and Britain. And then here, as Nigel Farage brought out yesterday, he was basically the lone voice expressing support for Donald Trump 2.5 years ago. He was in a lonely place, as he said. But now, more and more people, over a third now, they're beginning to wake up here in the UK and understanding that, well, maybe he is the guy that we should form a strong relationship with, at least with respect to trade. But you consider that prophecy, though, in Hosea 5, an earlier verse in the same chapter, verse 5, it says, "And the pride of Israel does testify to his face. Therefore shall Israel and Ephraim fall in their iniquity." So here are these two, the U.S. and Britain, both rose to world power and dominance together, going back to the early 1800s. You can read all about this in the United States and Britain in prophecy. And yet this prophecy, Hosea 5 and verse 5, it says that our nations will also fall together, along with Judah even. Judah's included there. So what that means then, that prophecy, is that while this I guess you could call it almost a renewal of this special relationship, particularly when you consider what was happening during the Obama years, it is a special relationship. There is history. But sadly, it's not going to result in the U.S. and Britain leading the world again with power and with dominance. That won't happen again until the wonderful world of tomorrow. But that said, when you look at the inspiring history on display last night at this glorious state dinner, well, it's inspiring in the historical sense and yet also sad when you consider the spiritual sickness in our nations today, both Ephraim and Manasseh. Queen Elizabeth, she spoke first at the festivities, the state banquet, and here's how she greeted her special guest. Clip 4.
Visits by American presidents always remind us of the close and long-standing friendship between the United Kingdom and the United States. And I'm so glad that we have another opportunity to demonstrate the immense importance that both our countries attach to our relationship.
There's no denying that special relationship status. Barack Obama tried to. He tried to say, well, it's no more special than our relationship with Greece or any other nation for that matter. He wanted to bring it down a notch, two notches, three notches. But here she, the Queen, brings out last night the link is strong. The attachment. It's special. And of course, in this week, especially this week, the 75-year anniversary of the D-Day landings, that link is, well, it's powerfully and strongly evident. If you just go back to what was happening in this nation, on the southern shores of England, across the channel, just 75 years ago, the Queen mentioned some of the sights that the president and his entourage were going to see these 3 days. He's in England, and then also his visits to Portsmouth down south, and then Normandy on the 6th, which is Thursday. Here's what she said, clip 5.
You will also travel to Portsmouth and Normandy to commemorate the 75th anniversary of D-Day. On that day, and on many occasions since, the armed forces of both our countries fought side by side to defend our cherished values of liberty and democracy. Mr. President, in your State of the Union address this year, you paid tribute to some of the American heroes who risked their lives. And we owe an immeasurable debt to the British, American, and Allied soldiers who began the liberation of Europe on the 6th of June, 1944. I paid my first state visit to your country at the invitation of President Eisenhower. As Supreme Allied Commander, he had ultimate responsibility for the execution of the Normandy landings. In his headquarters in St. James's Square, not far from Buckingham Palace, British and American officers worked closely together to plan the freedom of a continent. And it would be no exaggeration to say that millions of lives depended on their common endeavor.
Working together as one, a common endeavor, the Queen brings out, working to free a continent, millions and millions of lives dependent on the United States and Great Britain for their freedom. The president too had a lot to say about Normandy. We're going to be there, by the way, on Thursday, and we're finding out the more and more we look into it, just how restricted the area might be. So hopefully God will open some doors so that we can participate in some of, or at least view some of the festivities, some of the commemorations, some of the activities going on that anniversary. In any event, here she is stressing all of the common denominators that these two peoples have, the United States and Great Britain. Here's clip six.
Of course, it is not only our security which unites us, but our strong cultural links and shared heritage. Every year, there are almost 4 million visits by Americans to the United Kingdom, with a great number claiming British descent. And with your own Scottish ancestry, Mr. President, you too have a particular connection to this country. We are also bound by the strength and breadth of our economic ties as the largest investors in each other's economies. British companies in the United States employ over 1 million Americans, and the same is true vice versa.
I had no idea she was going to be mentioning me in her speech. One of the million. How come you didn't put that in your news stack, Richard? That should have been the number one item on the list that the Queen mentioned you. One of a million working in the UK. One of a million Americans working in the United Kingdom. Well, we share a common heritage, as she brought out. She worked her way toward the end of her speech and then concluded with this toast. Listen to this, clip seven.
Mr. President, as we look to the future, I'm confident that our common values and shared interests will continue to unite us. Tonight, we celebrate an alliance that has helped to ensure the safety and prosperity of both our peoples for decades, and which I believe will endure for many years to come. Ladies and gentlemen, I invite you all to rise and drink a toast to President and Mrs. Trump, to the continued friendship between our two nations, and to the health, prosperity, and happiness of the people of the United States.
As I said yesterday, you have to give the British family, the British royal family, credit. With so many voices in the media and in government just spewing out hatred for this president, here they are all through the day yesterday, just heartily embracing the president and his entourage. Now, I don't know all that went on. I know President Obama had a state dinner and President Bush before him, and I'm sure it was a bit as royal and regal, and the pomp and circumstance, the pageantry, I'm sure it was about the same. But as several commentators have noted, just in the way that the royal family has interacted with the Trump family, there was a lot of warmth, a lot of friendliness. And when you consider the hatred and the animosity that's talked about just routinely in the papers, it was astounding to watch. Here's how the president, when it was his turn to stand up and speak, here's how he addressed Her Majesty. This is clip 8.
Your Majesty, Melania and I are profoundly honored to be your guests for this historic state visit. Thank you for your warm welcome, for this beautiful weather, your gracious hospitality, and Your Majesty's nearly 7 decades of treasured friendship with the United States of America.
And from there, it was then largely about our common endeavor there at the end, or near the end, of World War II. Clip 9.
This week, we commemorate a mighty endeavor of righteous nations and one of the greatest undertakings in all of history. 75 years ago, more than 150,000 Allied troops were preparing on this island to parachute into France, storm the beaches of Normandy, and win back our civilization. As Her Majesty remembers, the British people had hoped and prayed and fought for this day for nearly 5 years. When Britain stood alone during the Blitz of 1940 and 1941, the Nazi war machine dropped thousands of bombs on this country and right on this magnificent city. Buckingham Palace alone was bombed on 16 separate occasions. In that dark hour, the people of this nation showed the world what it means to be British. They cleared wreckage from the streets, displayed the Union Jack from their shattered homes, and kept fighting on to victory. They only wanted victory. The courage of the United Kingdom's sons and daughters ensured that your destiny would always remain in your own hands. Through it all, the royal family was the resolute face of the Commonwealth's unwavering solidarity.
And all the American press wants to focus on is Donald Trump's spat with the London mayor, and then the fake news about his supposed spat with Meghan Markle. That's what you hear nonstop. We've been hearing it nonstop for days, and, well, they're missing out on actual news. They're missing out on important history. How much would they even focus on Normandy on the 75-year anniversary were it not for the president himself and his speechwriters bringing this up, reminding us of some important history, warning us with this history? He went on to say this, the president, clip 10.
In April 1945, newspapers featured a picture of the Queen Mother visiting the women's branch of the Army, watching a young woman repair a military truck engine. That young mechanic was the future queen, a great, great woman. Her Majesty inspired her compatriots in that fight to support the troops, defend her homeland, and defeat the enemy at all cost. We also pay tribute to Prince Philip's distinguished and valiant service in the Royal Navy during the Second World War. On D-Day, the Queen's beloved father, King George VI, delivered a stirring national address. That day, he said, after nearly 5 years of toil and suffering, we must renew that crusading impulse on which we entered the war and met its darkest hour. Our fight is against evil and for a world in which goodness and honor may be the foundation of the life of men in every land. This evening, we thank God for the brave sons of the United Kingdom and the United States who defeated the Nazis and the Nazi regime and liberated millions from tyranny. The bond between our nations was forever sealed in that great crusade.
No wonder the royal family has received the Trump family so well. On Sunday night, I referred to just some of the statements, including from King George VI, about praying to God for deliverance, getting God involved in that liberation of a continent, an entire continent. And one of the points I was making Sunday night is that we've forgotten this history. We forgot about the miracles. Well, the president doesn't bring up what King George VI said about God and miracles, but he did refer to his stirring national address. He's reminding us of some important history about how King George said that after nearly 5 years of toil and suffering, we must renew that crusading impulse on which we entered the war and met its darkest hour. Stirring history that you just don't expect to hear much these days. Not from politicians. Listen again to what the president had to say last night, clip 11.
As we honor our shared victory and heritage, we affirm the common values that will unite us long into the future. Freedom, sovereignty, self-determination, the rule of law, and reverence for the rights given to us by Almighty God. From the Second World War to today, Her Majesty has stood as a constant symbol of these priceless traditions. She has embodied the spirit of dignity, duty, and patriotism that beats proudly in every British heart.
This is possibly the finest speech Donald Trump has given as president. Congratulations to his speechwriters. A very eloquent speech. A powerful, powerful speech. He worked his way closer to the toast there at the end, and quite unlike his predecessor, he pulled it off beautifully. That was one of Barack Obama's more embarrassing moments when he botched the toast several years ago. Here's clip 12.
On behalf of all Americans, I offer a toast to the eternal friendship of our people, the vitality of our nations, and to the long-cherished and truly remarkable reign of Her Majesty the Queen.
Special relationship. On full display yesterday, that's for sure. And even some in the media, more honest journalists. This is no right-winger by any means. This is Christiane Amanpour from CNN. Listen to her reaction to the events of yesterday in London, clip 13.
To be honest with you, the day has gone so well for President Trump and for his hosts here that there seems to be absolutely no outward semblance of any discomfort or anything other than a really warm and highly well received in terms of who he met and the royal family visit so far.
No discomfort at all. Nothing awkward. Just highly well received. really warm. Even CNN had to admit this. Now, the commentator that was questioning Amanpour, he made sure that he prefaced his exchange with her by saying, now, don't forget about the London mayor. Don't forget about Meghan Markle. Don't forget about the tweets. And then she comes forward and says, well, look, I've got to be honest with you. This is pretty incredible, this special relationship. She went on to say this in the same exchange, clip 14.
And the last public event of the day was the state banquet at Buckingham Palace. And the pictures from in there were just stunning. They were superb. It is the kind of environment that the president, we have learned to know, enjoys. It was the kind of reception that he enjoys. And speaking to the Queen, he just looked incredibly comfortable, and the Queen looked comfortable, and you know, Prince Charles, his wife, the Duchess of Cornwall, and you saw Melania Trump, the First Lady. Everybody seemed to be just having a fairly good time. And the speeches were remarkably well placed. The Queen welcomed the President, really using this moment, which is the 75th anniversary of the joint operation, which was D-Day, to rid Europe of the Nazi menace. And that is very important, and that is very, very much front and center. So the Queen was highly attuned to that. They're all going to see each other again on the beaches of Normandy. And the president gave a very, very good speech in response.
A very, very good speech in response. That's probably the first and last time you'll hear CNN say that about President Trump. A very, very good speech. Speeches that were remarkably well-placed. And then the focus on the 75-year anniversary and the joint operation between the United States and Great Britain, a common endeavor. Millions of lives dependent on it. How long will it be before it returns back to normal? Attack. Attack this president. Take him out. That was at CNN. There was another reporter. This is NBC. who all but admits here that, well, you know, the news and the images from yesterday, they're pretty good, but just give the press in Britain and the United States some time, and then you'll know and understand the real story. Here's clip 15.
You know, you look at these pictures now, and they look just everything that the British are so good at carrying off in terms of pomp and circumstance. But that's the kind of incident that we'll learn about as the hours go on, and as today and tomorrow plays out. And you know that the combination of the American press and the British press, which are two of the most inquisitive and determined press in the world, you know that many, if there have been incidents, they are likely to discover them and publicize them. So I don't think we can necessarily assume that just because this is looking good now, that it will look good in the next few days.
What an amazing admission. We can't just because it looks good. You heard the speeches. You saw the warmth on display. But they will find something. That's what he's saying there. Don't you worry. Hey, we in the press, we're going to do everything we can to undermine this president's success. That's our job. He says they're two of the most inquisitive and determined. In fact, they're dishonest. And many of them are deranged. Obsessed with taking down this president. Obsessed with destroying this special relationship. Truly an enemy of the state, as Donald Trump has said a time or two. They view their nations. They view their traditions. They view this history with disdain. They hate this special relationship. They hate this president. They hate Brexit. Here's a reporter, an NBC reporter, saying that, I know it looked pretty good yesterday, but just give us a few days. Give us a few days, and then we'll tell you the real story. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Is prophecy real? Is it anything more than a collection of imaginations, vagaries, and wishful thinking? The answer is no. Human beings have never dreamed up an authentic prediction of the future. The human mind simply isn't capable of it. Such a feat would require godlike power. What about Bible prophecy? Is Bible prophecy real? Is it different than the litany of other failed prophecies that have been discarded throughout human history? Unlike other books, particularly those books that claim to predict the future, the Bible has endured for thousands of years. Something about this book has transcended thousands of generations of human history. And this book, the Holy Bible, claims to predict the future. It claims its prophecies come not from the minds of human beings, but from the mind of their Creator, from the mind of God. Prove the Bible's prophecies for yourself. If you cannot honestly prove them to be true, discard the Bible and move on with your life. But if you can, what a spectacular book the Bible becomes. Request Herbert W. Armstrong's free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This book will examine the core Bible prophecies and compare them to history and current events. More than 6 million people have requested this amazing and easy-to-read book. Order The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong and prove Bible prophecy for yourself. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
On yesterday's show, I mentioned that Sarah Carter article where she talked about how dishonest the investigators were when pulling together the information on the Mueller report, particularly with respect to this phone conversation between one of President Trump's attorneys or former attorneys, John Dowd. And he was talking to an attorney for Mike Flynn and basically called him up and said, you know, just keep me posted on what happens here, the developments. And so these prosecutors from the Mueller team, they used an ellipsis strategically, left out the information that was exculpatory and made it seem like this lawyer was obstructing justice. That was revealed thanks to a court order by Judge Emmett Sullivan, I think it was. And then, of course, this reporting from Devin Nunes and then Sarah Carter. Nunes, of course, is in the House of Representatives. But here's the lawyer in question, John Dowd, and what he said last night on Fox, clip one.
And I'm so glad Judge Sullivan ordered the transcript because we now know the truth. And we also know that this entire report by Mueller is a fraud, and we're going to find more of these things. Isn't it ironic that this man who kept indicting and prosecuting people for process crimes committed a false statement in his own report? By taking out half my words, they changed the kai, the tenor, and the contents of that conversation with Robert Kellner. And it's an outrage, and there's probably more of it.
It is outrageous. And how much more of this is there in that 448-page report? Here, like Dowd brings out, Mike Flynn, if he makes one false statement, he's going off to jail. He's going to be prosecuted. So what about this false statement? It completely changed the tenor, the meaning of the contents of that discussion. It's outrageous. And there's probably a lot more of that embedded within that nearly 500-page report. Alan Dershowitz, the left-wing lawyer, he was on the same program, and this is what he said, clip two.
This is a very, very serious issue. The distortion of the doubt, quote, is very serious, especially since, remember, that a report by a special counsel is always going to be one-sided. Therefore, you have to trust it, because the other side doesn't have a chance to look at it and show what's wrong with it the way it would in an adversarial situation. If a lawyer made a representation like that to a court and said, this is the quote, and left out the crucial context, which showed, as John said, that what he discussed was not only absolutely proper, but obligatory for a counsel when you have a joint defense agreement to find out exactly what's likely to be used against your client.
Why aren't there more journalists pouncing on this? It's only just on Fox News. That's it. But here it's the report of a special counsel is always going to be one-sided. It's Mueller and his team of attorneys. And every single one of them were left-wing. Donors to the Clinton campaign. Supporters of Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama. And it's the same with the FISA applications. They go to the court and it's just one-sided. It's our side. It's judge, we need to spy on Carter Page because, well, there's all this nefarious activity going on with the Russians, in fact. And we've got all of this verified. And the judge gave it out each time because he trusted the DOJ. Look at the trust that reporters today have for Bob Mueller and the Mueller report. Well, now it's beginning to be cross-examined, at least by a few. He's happy, Mr. Dowd is, that Judge Sullivan ordered the transcript to be revealed. It took a judge saying, you've got to show the whole truth for this to be revealed, for this to see the light of day. It does make you begin to wonder, given how that press conference went last week with Mr. Mueller. He didn't look as confident as I... Here we haven't heard from him in 2 or 3 years. I didn't even know what he sounded like. But he looked a little nervous and uneasy to me, and a few others have brought this out as well. And you contrast it with the few interviews that William Barr, the Attorney General, is giving. He looks pretty confident and sure that we're going to get to the bottom of this. I played some clips on yesterday's program from that interview on Friday with CBS, Molly Hemingway. She's had time to pull together the 28 moments from that interview, the 28 bombshell moments from Mr. Barr's interview with CBS. Him pointing out, the Attorney General, that Mueller should have reached a conclusion. It was his fault that he didn't reach the conclusion. And so Barr came along and said, well, based upon the evidence or lack thereof, not only was there no conspiracy, there's no obstruction here. She points out, Molly Hemingway, that the other statement, the other bombshell, that the DOJ is not going to be an adjunct to Congress. It's not going to be subservient to Congress or be used by Congress as a weapon. Molly Hemingway says, Mueller's guilty until proven innocent standard, not the standard we use at the DOJ. That's quoting from Barr. Not the standard we use. He's going by one standard, but there's another one that we use at the DOJ. That came out last week as well. Barr doesn't care about the hyper-partisan complaints. We played some of that yesterday. Well, we're just living in a hyper-partisan age. Of course there's going to be complaints. Of course there's going to be criticism. Of course. He expects it. A few more points from Molly Hemingway's article. Mueller letter complaining about lack of impeachment narrative was a little snitty and staff-driven. That's Barr's reaction to Mueller's complaint that the press wasn't covering this the way that he had hoped. Mr. Barr also pointed out last week that he was troubled by the lack of response to the Russian threat. If they were alarmed by these threats in early 2016, how come they didn't do anything about it until after Donald Trump won the election? She points out how that he is holding to his word of choice, spying. We're not going to retire that word just because President Trump has used it. We're not going to remove it from the English language just because it appears in one of the president's tweets. Spying is a good word, he keeps saying. It's a good word. And what concerns me is that if that went on, if a political opponent was being spied upon, that's disturbing. That's crossing a red line. Because law enforcement or intelligence officials should not be meddling in U.S. elections. Really, if you understand what Mr. Barr is saying, he's more concerned about that than he is about Russian meddling. Now, they're both concerns. But if you have interference into the U.S. election process coming from the Democratic Party, coming from the Obama-era DOJ, that goes right against everything that the United States stands for. More points from her article. Government officials should not become a Praetorian Guard. Use of spy tools against political campaigns is a serious red line. We played some of these clips yesterday. He said that he's going to protect against the abuse of government power. And then he really laid into the media. They should be the watchdogs of our civil liberties. They should be the ones exposing this. They should be the ones crying aloud yesterday and the day before. Hey, what about this ellipses you used? You didn't include the whole conversation. You actually distorted and changed the meaning by quoting what you did. They don't care, though. Only a few will bring this to our attention. The 2016 meddling by the DOJ and such, it's antithetical to the democratic system, Mr. Barr said. He also pointed out that there was gross and appalling bias by FBI agents. 28 bombshells covered in Molly Hemingway's most recent article, the last one on the list being resistance is shredding our institutions. It's not the Russian interference that's shredding our institutions. It's the resistance against this president. And I also liked the statement that he made. I didn't play this yesterday, but the statement he made about his reputation and whether or not he is ruining it. And he says, he said on Friday, yeah, but everyone dies. And I don't believe in the Homeric idea that, you know, immortality comes by having odes sung about you over the centuries. So he's prepared to come out of retirement to help his government to restore order to the Department of Justice. He's their worst nightmare, as we said yesterday. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a few emails coming from you listeners. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. the Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
A few emails coming from some of our listeners. This first one here from England, it says, thank you, Stephen Flurry, for working in England. That comes from Queen Elizabeth II. Just kidding. You have to go back to segment one to hear the context. This actually comes from Illinois. Thank you, Mr. Flurry, for the daily evaluation tools. I think this is in response to Friday's program. I just recently started to use these. There are some things in my life I'm trying to improve upon. I'm having success, and it energizes me, empowers me to increase my Christian walk with Jesus. Day by day, bit by bit, I'm trying. I've come a long way, and I still have a long way to go. The Trumpet radio show has helped me in countless ways. That comes from Illinois, and this one here, coming in from Kansas, says, as usual, most interesting newsy program live on YouTube. It's a wonderful treat to see Edstone students and workers serving the attendees, looking, she's talking about the PAC in Cardiff, looking forward to the next day trip documentary. Well, hopefully on this trip we depart for tomorrow, we'll be able to get some recordings along the way and play some of that for you at a later time. So we'll do our best. But she says here, this listener from Kansas, faithfully watching and waiting for live broadcasts on TV someday. So there you go, Richard. That's your next goal. We've actually done that once or twice, I guess, with YouTube. In any event, another one here from Missouri. It says, what a comparison to what's going on with the U.S. justice system and God's government to see and watch this country fall to pieces while getting to live in refuge of the fiery law is astounding. We get to know stabilization, justice, and true freedom. It's made me really appreciate even more how Mr. Flurry upholds the government within the church, as well as those under him. We're able to reason with God, the Almighty, consult with his ministry for direction and getting the correction necessary to be put on the right path for our freedom to live an abundant life. How special we are to experience this now and then to get to teach the world. It's incredible. She says here also, we're chomping at the bit to hear you elaborate on your recent trip to Jerusalem. You threw that tiny detail out, mentioned running into Melanie Phillips all nonchalantly, and our minds are reeling with the possibilities. Exciting times. Well, we had an exciting trip to Jerusalem, and we were able to view some property down there. We're constantly keeping our eyes open for rental properties or even properties that we might purchase. There's nothing in the pipeline for the next few weeks or months even. But again, depending upon developments there with the college or with an excavation, it's just something we do. And if we see an intriguing looking property, we'll head down there from this office because it's just a 4.5-hour flight and it's not really that expensive. So that was the reason for that that trip. The meeting with Melanie Phillips was not planned. We just saw her walking down the streets of Jerusalem and started shouting at her. And then we chased after her and had a really nice conversation for 5-10 minutes. A last one here from Texas. It says, exercise. This is in response to the getting outside and walking program from last week. He says, exercise is never simple. I believe it's because we're often unmotivated. I do find that what helps me is to focus on how I felt after the last workout. Then I'd then just getting through that first set. I feel over that. I get over that hill, and it just becomes somewhat pleasurable and fulfilling. It says, I began last year around this time to have a goal of 100 push-ups a day. It was a struggle, and it still is, but I'm now up to 200 push-ups. That's awesome. He says here, after my work week is finished and before driving 2 hours home, I pass by the grocery store because where I live, there isn't one for 35 miles. And when I wake up on the sixth day, I prepare my food for the following week, freeze some of it, and so on. He gives some detail on just some of the things that he shops for. So he's doing his part to try to stay healthy with good eating and regular exercise as well. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the show, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.